All right, this is Jaquetta Williams, your host for Your Health Connection. We're talking about prostate cancer before the break. We were talking about another sensitive subject that's hard for men to deal with, and we're talking about erectile dysfunction. Can you talk about that, doctor?
Yeah, as it relates to prostate cancer, it's also been one of the barriers, I think, for men. If you look at the historical treatments of prostate cancer, you know, historically, the only treatment was surgery. For many years, the only option we had for men was the radical removal of the prostate gland. And we still do that operation today. It's evolved to something called a robotic prostatectomy done with the scope, but it's still the removal of the prostate. We've actually had wonderful success using radiation, the placement of radiation pellets or seeds, freezing the prostate. So there are a host of different options of treatment for patients. But they all, if you look at historically, before we knew the anatomy of the nerves, the removal of the prostate almost resulted in a close to 100% erectile dysfunction rate. So the men who had prostate cancer and had surgery would be impotent as a consequence of the surgery. And so a lot of men...
So that's something that Viagra couldn't help.
It does. It works for that. It works. And that's the one thing that we try to counsel men is that don't let the side effect of the treatment, because we have treatments for the side effect that make it better.
Okay.
But for a lot of men, they didn't want to be screened because they didn't want to go through the treatment because the treatment would render them impotent. What I tell men when I do talks is, and last time I checked at a cemetery, no one's having sex there.
Right.
You know? And
no,
so
that's
you have
right.
to put it in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are these things that will keep you alive and early diagnosis and the treatments, even though they can have side effects, as all things do, we can deal with the side effects. We just need to get you cured of your cancer or get the cancer treated.
Mr. Franklin, was that ever a concern for you, or were you just more about trying to save your life?
Me, it's about saving my life. But let me comment upon that specific subject matter, and that's because I do quite a bit of conversation with men, and generally this is going to be their number one concern. And I kind of tell them things that's a little different than what the doctor tell men. I tell them what the doctor is going to tell them, but I also tell them what reality is going to show.
And what's the reality for you?
And the reality, remember, I've been dealing with this for 7 years, and I talk to men who have had external radiation, internal radiation, seed implants, all kinds of surgeries, and what I find with men is that it doesn't matter what kind of treatment you get, you are likely to have the same effect. And
what is that, that you won't be able to?
You're going to have some issues relating
down there
to those functions. But what happens is that when men fill out these little, how you doing? I always tell men that men are known to lie. So they don't tell the doctors the truth. Because remember, I've been dealing with this for 7 years. And I find that no matter what kind of treatment you get, you're going to have to deal with those issues afterward. Not just the surgery. Not just a robotic surgery. It doesn't matter. You're going to have to deal with those treatments. So when they go to their doctors and they tell their doctors to lie, the doctors can only tell men what the statistics show. Oh, and the statistics will come from the men themselves, but they don't tell the truth.
Do you get that, doctor?
Yeah, there's a much higher incidence than what report is reported by men. But what I think, before you treat the patient, you have to set up expectation for them and talk about the potential side effects or complications of their chosen therapy, and with the understanding that we actually have treatments for them. And so, yes, you asked the question, does Viagra or those type of pills work for men who've had prostate cancer treatment? Yes, it does. The medicines do work. Well, we do have other treatments for leakage and things. So that shouldn't be a barrier to getting cured from the cancer, but it's been the evolution of the treatment. Historically, we didn't have an answer to that question.
Right.
Now we do. And so we do live in a time where we shouldn't let the potential complication direct the fact that you're going to get screened or definitely choose to be treated or not treated for your cancer.
I know this is a sensitive subject for some of our listeners, but we still want to take your questions. Again, that number is 404-880-9255. Again, 404-880-9255. Let's go back and talk about, you said that you think all men should be screened, but we were also talking about the African-American community, it being higher because of diet. What is it about our diets that's causing it?
Well, we don't know if it's specifically about diet. What we do know about prostate cancer is the highest incidence of prostate cancer in the world are with African-American men. The second highest maybe with Caucasian men in America. So it's something endemic about being in the United States. If you carve out our cultural diet as African-American, subcultural, maybe our food choices, how we chose to prepare foods, may be a link to it, maybe some socioeconomic factors, maybe some environmental factors. If you look at another ethnic group, the Asian American or native-born Japanese male, the incidence of prostate cancer in the East is very, very low in Japan.
Well, then we need to find out what they're doing.
Well, they're eating. Their dietary habits are different. But if you let that Japanese male move to the United States and live here for 10 years and adopt our cultural diet as U.S. citizens, their incidence of heart disease and prostate cancer almost mirrors a native-born American. So, and if you look at those communities as well, if you travel, there's McDonald's everywhere now. And so we're seeing some of this cultural westernization of dietary habits begin to affect some of these areas that had lower incidences of certain kind of cancers, with instance of heart disease and prostate cancer in Southeast Asia has gone up. It's just because of the introduction of the American Western dietary habit.
So I know that you said 40. Have you run into, because I know for breast cancer survivors, it can happen in their 20s, 30s. With this 40 age being the target number, have you seen men who are younger?
Absolutely. And
you have.
And screen men younger. If you have someone who has a strong family history of prostate cancer.
What's strong? A dad or?
A father, immediate family member, a father or brother with prostate cancer, a father may have been diagnosed in their 40s. I'll screen that man at age 35, age 30. We diagnosed last year maybe 10 men under the age of 40 with prostate cancer because they may have had a altered PSA. You know, if that man comes in and he's 40 or 39, his PSA's 2, that's too high of a PSA for a man of that age. And so we're really starting to look at these subgroups because these are the people that you want to diagnose, the younger patient. This is the person that you can affect longevity as opposed to an older man. And you find some of the lack of screening, once a man gets over the age of 75 or 80, we're not as aggressive in the screening because even if the man has prostate cancer in general is a very slow-growing tumor by nature. And so some men will just have surveillance. They'll watch and wait, and they'll die of some other natural cause, not that cancer.
So if I'm a man and my father had prostate cancer, and let's just say I'm 35, 6, 7, or 8, and I've been checked and nothing has happened as far as my prostate is concerned, is that something that I need to be doing every year?
I would. I look at men of African descent being a high-risk group. I get my prostate checked twice a year. I get a PSA twice.
Why twice? That's just something, just preventative?
I'm at a high-risk group being of African descent. Hmm. I don't have a family history of prostate cancer, but, it's a real disease, and I can't sit here and, because I treat it, think that it's going to just sidestep me for some reason. So, but I definitely think that their men are at a high-risk group. Say you are of African descent and you do have family history, like someone in Mr. Franklin's family, some of the men, it's not unreasonable to tell them to get screened twice a year. And what you also should be telling men, how do you prevent
That's going to be my next question. Yeah. So if I am 30-something and my tests are going well so far, is there anything I can do to prevent it and to keep it from happening to me?
Yeah. Well, you can't necessarily keep it from happening. If there's a genetic predisposition, you may not turn that cell on. But there are some wonderful data on prevention using really natural things. There's some wonderful studies that have been done looking at vitamin E. There's one looking at vitamin D. Lycopene, which is in tomatoes. Selenium is another herbal formulation. There's some things that looked at low levels of dietary zinc is causing prostate cancer in men. And then a heart-healthy diet is a prostate-healthy diet. So you have to look at, if you look at high-fat, high-cholesterol diet as being of our community, if I want to lower my risk of prostate cancer, How about lowering my just overall risk of my coronary risk? And then also the prostate cancer survivor has to change. So the men who are being treated, you have to change that behavior as well. So some of those recommendations for prevention also in the survivor keeps it from recurring as well. So,
Mr. Franklin, this is the perfect place to bring you back in. But before we do that, we've got a question from Laura. She's in Stone Mountain. She has a question. Laura, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
You're so welcome. What's your question?
My question is, I just recently have gone to, it's actually a living food seminar, and I learned something called a health scope scan analysis. And I wanted to ask the doctor, because I too have had a favorite uncle of mine had a prostate problem. And also, I wanted to know if this scan is something that the doctor is familiar with, because it's a non-invasive scan, and if men are so apprehensive of going because of the scan, the process that they would need to have their rectal area manipulated for this test, is this something that they can use where it is non-invasive and they might readily take this form of treatment or testing rather than the other types that...
So basically, you're saying rather than having to do the rectal exam with the finger, there's a scan that can do that?
Health scope scan analysis is what I'm told it's called.
Okay.
Is this something that can be used to dissect this prostate condition?
Yeah. Laura, I'm not familiar with that particular scan, and it would have to be, in order to make kind of recommendations on it, something that would have been looked at in terms of trials to see... what's the probability of having cancers within the different findings on the scan. We need to find some option. But I tell you what's really interesting for the men, you know, most prostate cancers are diagnosed with PSA. Mr. Mm-hmm. Franklin's story is PSA. It's not the digital rectal examination.
Right.
So the men are afraid. I have some men who come in, and I don't recommend this. I recommend that they should have both the PSA and digital rectal exam. Just come get the blood test.
Yeah, at least do that.
Yeah.
Right. So, Mr. Franklin, we were talking about your how you fought your cancer. You said you had 5 months of chemo. You did 2 clinical trials. You did the 5 months of chemo, but then the chemo stopped working, which is why you went into the clinical trials, and then that didn't really work as you wanted it to. So what did finally work for you?
Let me make a correction. I did a clinical trial before the chemo. That didn't work. Then I did chemo for 5 months. After 5 months, it stopped working. Then I did 2 more clinical trials after the chemo. Neither one of them worked. Now, that doesn't mean that the trials didn't work.
It just didn't
work on me.
Right.
Or you didn't get the drug.
Well, the first one, I didn't get the drug. First one was the blind study, and I didn't get the drug. But the second and third, I got the drug.
Okay.
So we made sure I got the drugs, but those two didn't work either.
So what did work?
An approved drug that I'm on now. It's a chemo drug, but it's oral. It's oral drug, and that is working fine at this point in time.
Will you have to take that from now on, or do you take it until your cancer subsides, or what?
You take it until it doesn't work any longer. That's the problem with cancer drugs. They work for a while, and then the cancer gets smart, and it outsmarts the drug. So hopefully it will work long enough so that a more potent drug will be out there on the market.
Don't forget, 404-880-9255 is the number to call if you have a question. Ladies, I'd love to hear from you since the men seem to be a little bit shy about calling. So maybe you can call on behalf of your man, ask the question, and that way both of you get the information you need. How about that? 404-880-9255. So basically, doctor, what he's saying is he's taking this medication and will continue to take it. So basically, is his... is it dormant or is it kind of, it's not gone, basically, is what you're saying.
That is correct.
It's still there, but you're able to at least control it?
That is correct.
With the drug that you're taking.
At this time, that is correct.
Is that normal, doctor?
Yeah, there are patients who have advanced disease that, unfortunately, we live in a time where we do have these options. And I do appreciate you participating in the clinical trials because that's how we've gotten
this. A lot of black people don't do that, too. That's another problem.
And so, yes, fortunately in prostate cancer, and we talk about this PSA as a screening test, but PSA was never designed as a screening test. It was designed to follow men who had been treated with prostate cancer. So what's really remarkable is that we have a way to monitor him and how he's progressing. He still gets his PSAs checked. We use that to see where he stands with this. And one of the benchmarks that his doctors look at is how his PSA is doing. And that lets us know how he's responding to the treatment. If his PSA is low or normal, going to zero, he's in remission.
That's good.
Just stay the course, you know, because we have several other medicines as well that aren't on the horizon, but some that he probably hasn't even used yet. You know, we've had this big boom explosion of prostate cancer medicines and treatments over the past 2 or 3 years for men who have advanced disease. So the pendulum is swinging. I mean, we're really beginning to talk about this disease, and men are starting to stand up the way women have done so wonderfully in the past years with breast cancer. And so we see the outcomes here, and he fortunately has medicines that will help keep him alive.
And Mr. Franklin, you're also part of a documentary that's called If You Are My Brother.
That is correct.
What made you want to do that, and what's that about?
Well, when I was diagnosed, I informed my fraternity. You happen to be my sister.
Oh, you're an Alpha Phi Alpha.
Yes.
Oh, six. Okay. Ski-wee.
Okay, Radio Land. Okay. We're not going to do the fraternity
Come
thing.
On, go ahead. Go ahead.
But once I informed my undergrad chapter, I went to University of Georgia, one of the brothers read my email where I went through and I told him exactly what I was facing, because at that time the doctor had given me no more than 2 years to live. And when he read my email, he thought that my story should be put on film. And we began to film in February of 07. And we have been filming since February of 07. And this is 2013, every treatment known to man, basically, I've had, and we have filmed it, and it's to show how a person cope with his disease. And we went to the funeral home, and we filmed the caskets, because I went and I picked out my casket. I did all that. I made all my funeral arrangements, so we all this stuff is on film. You know, it was quite serious. And he thought that this would be a great way of bringing a story to the public. And as you know, there's nothing like television that really can affect.
It drives the point home.
That's right.
Mr. Franklin, hold, stand still, because we've got some questions from some of our listeners. We've got Aaron, who is out of Atlanta. Aaron, what's your question?
I want to put forth this question. About maybe 4 or 5 months before I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, I became a vegan. And I had my prostate removed, but I continued to be a vegan, but along with, I made green tea. The beverage of the day, every day is like green tea with turmeric in it. I was wondering, right now it's been 5 years and my PSA is still below zero. So I was just wondering, is the vegan diet is what causing that and plus the green tea?
Doctor, you can go ahead and address that if you'd like.
Aaron, I think your dietary choices are helping you a great deal. I do recall you saying you had your prostate removed, so I think that the traditional treatment of removing your prostate is, you know, and you had an early diagnosis, your prostate was removed, and there's no evidence of cancer there. I think your approach to this as a survivor is a very important one, because if you look at cancer, all it is just a normal cell that changes. Mm-hmm. And normally your body recognizes that and goes and eats that cell up. So you have to figure, what's my risk of developing other cancers? I have to change. Something happened in my immune system that made it not recognize it. So the fact that you're adhering to this vegan diet and drinking the green tea with the antioxidants is probably, number one, keeping the prostate cancer from recurring, mm-hmm. and also helping you in another regard. So that's one. I mean, I think survivors are wonderful people, because their approach to this is just moving forward, changing behavior,
right.
changing attitude, and changing the things that got you, unfortunately, there in the first place.
Right.
And so it's a wonderful message that both of these men are giving us.
That turmeric root is something that I use every day, mm-hmm. as well. And I do the green tea as well, too. Don't forget the phone number, 404-880-9255. We still want to take your questions. Ladies, if the men won't call in for your man. As the man, you can tell your lady what the question is that you want asked, and she can ask it for you. And that way, both of you get the information. Deal? Okay, I know you're at home saying deal, or in the car, or wherever you are. 404-880-9255. We're coming right back.
The Cancer Center at Clark Atlanta University, in partnership with the English Avenue and Vine City Ministerial Alliance, will host a Harvest of Health Wellness Fair on Saturday, October 19, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. The Wellness Fair will be held at Greater Bethany Baptist Church at 786 Thurman Street in Vine City. This event will offer various types of preventive screenings, with the main focus on prostate cancer screening for men. The Wellness Fair will also provide information, education, and screening services to empower people and address health disparities. It will specifically target men and the medically underserved in the Vine City and English Avenue areas who are at greater risk for developing prostate cancer. For more information, contact CCRTD at 404-880-6878.
It's 2013, and there are now modern methods of detecting and treating prostate cancer. For you, this means that many prostate cancers are now found earlier and can be treated more effectively. Remember, the earlier you find out about prostate cancer growth, the easier it will be to treat. So the solution is simple. Get screened today and enjoy a life without having to worry about prostate cancer. This announcement in the public interest is made possible by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. More information is available online at ccrtd.cau.edu.